Hello, everybody. Hi, Squad.
Hey, Squad.
Oh, I have another... I don't know how this happened. I really don't. So I go into our Instagram, and I see that we have an unread message. So I'm like, it's not at the top, so I'm like, where is it? This is crazy. I scroll down, and from April 2023, a really kind girl named Skylar messaged us and said that she had just started listening to us a little over a week before. And so I was about to respond because I was like, all right, April 24, we can correct this. We can write this wrong. I'll just explain again that we're toddling old fools. But then I saw the 23 and I was like, well, it's far too late. I can't respond to that.
Oops.
So I am so sorry, Skylar. If you are still a listener, first of all, thank you. If you go back to our last episode, in the beginning, we addressed this. We've gotten messages over the years.
2 years.
2 years. And we sometimes just don't see them. So this one was especially odd. I hate when I have unread messages. I have to go find it. Like, you know how sometimes Google will like freak out and be like, you have an unread message. And I'm like, no, I don't. You're lying.
That's very odd. I don't know. I feel like my social media has been acting really odd lately.
Very weird. But it came up as an unread message like 2 years later. I know that sounds fake, but it's not. And it's okay. We are Elite Squad Pod, SVU in review. That is Law and Order SVU. We recap because we are recappers. And we also do a light commentary on it. That is the review part. I'm laughing because a lot of times our reviews are a little critical.
I'm going to be pretty critical of this one.
This was season 2, episode 18, I think. Oh, 19. Sorry, I have it up here. Season 2, episode 19, Parasites. The original air date was April 27th, 2001. The director is David Platt. David Platt directed 54 episodes of SVU. He directed a bunch for Law & Order proper too, but we have him to thank for one of our favorites. I actually forgot what it was called, but it was Disrobed, Gina Silver's episode.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't recognize his name. So I was like, is he a first timer? But oh, Disrobed.
Disrobed. Thank you so much, David. I know you didn't write it, but thanks for being there. I don't think I've ever been more outraged in my life
than what they did to Gina Silver.
I've just,
they were
ruthlessly
on one that episode.
I read the synopsis of the episode because I looked up Gina Silver because I was thinking, I hope people can Google her when we talk about her. Otherwise, they're like, who is this? And you can. But the wiki wildly under, it does not get into the details. They're like, oh yeah, she agreed to help the squad. I'm like, she did not agree to help the squad.
They blackmailed her.
Blackmailed her, threatened, spoken to horribly. And then cast out on the streets. They were like, unfortunately, then following that, her husband got out of jail. I'm like, no, you're forgetting about like literally everything else. I know. Thank you.
They're Brittany like, putting- in a unseen twist that no one, absolutely no one, not our sweet, innocent detectives could have seen coming.
Insane handling of that description.
How dare you? How fucking dare you?
I wanted to edit it, but one time I tried to edit, I won't say what movie, one time I tried to edit the Wikipedia of a movie that I love, and the Wikipedia was trash. Wikipedia accused me of bullying.
You should be like, I'm accusing you of bullying. What do you mean bullying?
Right? I'm assuming they thought because I was changing, like, pretty much the entire thing, that they thought I was being like, this is trash, but it was.
This is what's wrong with our world.
It's, I know, it really is.
And you try to bring facts and people are like, I feel triggered.
They're like, I don't like this.
I don't like the facts, so I'm going to come up with my own facts.
Also, so I love this. So after season two, well, because he directed Lloyd's Boys. That was another one,
oh
season
God.
Two, episode 7. So that episode is called Asunder, actually, in real life. Season 2, episode 7. So another one we thoroughly enjoyed. Shitting on. And then after that, he seems to have averaged an approximate 2 to 8 episodes each season until season 11.
Wow. Okay. So he's like an SVU favorite.
Yeah. Until season 11, when he stopped, just stopped cold turkey. And I assumed it's because he too is in protest of Stabler's departure.
I would also like refuse to keep directing. I'd be like, I'm good.
There was a note here. We're in mid to late April in this episode, kind of like how we are in real life back in 2001. So it's like, I think we like start around like the 15th and we end around the 27th. Although that doesn't make sense because that would make it like a 10-day investigation.
I do want to say at one point the date card shows that it's April 13th. And I'm like, that's impossible because on April 13th, Munch, Finn, and Cabot were in Canada.
Thank you. I think I thought that too. I was like, wait a minute.
Because I made a big deal about it being April 13th. And I was like, okay, so we skipped the month of March only for you guys to like double up dates in April.
Is this like this what we're supposed to be like, oh, okay, no, Benson and Stabler were doing this? No, because then Munch and Finn were also doing this too. So it's like, no, it's been a year as far as this show goes, I think, since Brian Cassidy screamed at Olivia in the middle of the bullpen as she was heading out for a date.
Wasn't that Easter?
It was around, yeah, because I remember we were like, well, it's like Easter-ish now, so it's been...
Oh, yeah, because it was like October, and they're like 6 months later, so we were like, all right, yeah. Well, then it's gotta be...
Yes, so it's been like a year since he fucking did that, and if you want to go back, everyone, and you're like, what are you guys talking about? It's Elite Squad's 11th episode, Water Sign Down Bad, and it's a recap of Closure Part 1.
I love that episode.
Opening scene. We begin in the backyard of a brownstone in Brooklyn. It might not be Brooklyn, but I'm just going to say it is. So two workmen are in the process of digging a hole because they're installing an above-ground jacuzzi, so says the homeowner, Mr. Sawyer. And he's complaining and wondering why they have to dig so low because it's an above-ground jacuzzi. I just think that's silly because plumbing. It's not an inflatable jacuzzi.
Yeah, and the guys are like, oh, well, we have to make a base. And yeah. The guy's like, pull out all my weeds.
Yeah, he's like, oh, well, the last owners left this backyard a mess. They left it in shambles. So, you know, is there anything you could do about that? And the guy, one of the workmen's like, yeah, for sure, Mr. Sawyer. We'll clean up, no charge. We'll just take everything out with us. And Mr. Sawyer's like, mur, 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 good job. So then the second workman, who's like in the process of digging the hole, goes, hey, but aren't those hydrangea bushes over there? And to me, I go, who the fuck cares? But I guess like they're expensive. So the first guy goes, yeah, duh, why do you think I said we'd take everything with us? He doesn't even know what those are. We could make more off selling those than we could off this job. And again, I go, really?
It's such like a dumb little side plot where they're, it's like, oh, these two are running a hydrangea scam.
Mid-sentence, the first guy's being like, I know a guy out in Hoboken. The second guy puts his shovel into the hole, an obligatory final time, and he lifts out an entire human skull.
In the spade of his shovel.
Like light as a feather. So then we hear the classic line, oh, jeez, while the camera's closing up on the skull. You know how they do that? They, like, linger. They're like, oh, jeez, in the background.
Yeah, guys, I know. It's never a good day to find a body.
BNS arrive, and they are now speaking with the Sawyers, both of them. Stabler's in a baseball cap. As is now, oh, it's April 13th. I wrote it down. Today is now April 13th.
Told you. It's bullshit. Yeah.
They're supposed to be in Canada. Well, actually, no, I guess Stabler and Benson weren't, but still, there's a murderer in Canada, mm-hmm. Guys. Get out of this backyard. Stabler is in a baseball cap because it's spring and he can be a little bit more playful with his headwear.
He looks cute in a baseball cap.
He does. I still wonder why we're doing this. We never commit to it, but okay. And our audience is waiting with bated breath to see what item we're going to find that will make it so that SVU has to be here instead of just homicide, because, you know, it's bones. So the Sawyers are complaining about how inconvenient this all is for them, and BNS tell them to go away. They're like, yeah, well, we're going to need to, like, discuss it over here. They're like, okay. Bye. Bye, Sawyers. We found a skull back here. There's a dead person. So they venture up to Lance Reddick, who is on the scene helping CSI with the bones. They say bones. This is our word, our buzzword, the bones.
Bones.
I will never be referring to Lance Reddick by his character name in this. He is Lance Reddick. So he tells us that judging by the bones, the skull, the bones, the victim is a Caucasian female she's approximately between like late 20s, early 30s. Cause of death is currently unclear. There were a few degraded clothes found with the bones. Stabler asks why this is a sexual homicide, of course. And I was wondering too, I'm like, all right, what are we going to find?
Panties.
A vial of semen. So Lance shows them on a tray that there is a crucifix and a studded dog collar and leash found with the body. Looks like a bone lady was somebody's pet, Stabler says. Bone lady.
Olivia kind of gives him, like, a bit of a look. Like,
maybe not so bombastic, but it's...
It was kind of like, why'd you say that?
I think she was expecting something a little less inappropriate because she had her, like, pre-Stabler snark smirk on. She was about to be like,
Here's our bone lady, our murder victim. What?
But, you know, and Brittany and I, we haven't gotten to do this in a little while. We just want to remind them that, yeah, this is a murder victim. Season 1 was rife with really inappropriate banter about the murder victims, and I guess skeletons are not off limits either.
I would say only in the past, like, handful of episodes have they had some weird quippy thing before the theme song.
I was gonna say, this feels kind of, like we haven't had this conversation in a while. But yeah, was it Folly?
Folly had the really stupid one. And then I think there was one for Manhunt, where Munch was like, and now that man is back or whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, it was because Finn goes, how long do you think we have? And or how long do you think he'll keep her for? And Munch goes, till he's done with her. Yeah. Super helpful.
Done with this.
Dun dun. Now we're in the neighbor's apartment. This is another reason why the episode was boring to recap, because we go to so many like just houses.
It's just, this is like a tour of real estate around Manhattan.
So B&S are, oh, I said they're probably going door to door to see if the neighbors know anything since the Sawyers only just moved into the brownstone. So that's probably why they're doing it. They're talking to one guy who says the hydrangeas were planted by the previous owners, Brad and Abby Stanton. So according to this man, the Stantons fought constantly from the day they moved in until the day Abby finally moved out 4 years ago. They also like go between 3 and 4 years. It's pretty funny. They're like, that was exactly 3 years ago. And it's like, oh, it all happened the same week 3 years ago, I guess.
We get it.
Stabler asks if they were ever violent with one another or if there was ever violence. And this guy says no, just loud. Just loud. After Abby moved out, she would show up once a week about 3 a.m.-ish and bang on the door, wailing for money. Brad would open the door and give her some cash, and that would usually end it. But one day, he decided to not answer the door, so Abby started screaming that she would report him for sleeping with his patients. Then, the neighbor says, the door flew open and Abby got the crap beat out of her. And Stabler and I have the same thought, because I'm like, hey, didn't you just say, and this guy's a fucking asshole.
He phrased it so specifically so that he could go.
Actually, yeah, Stabler's like, I thought you said there wasn't any violence. The neighbor goes, no, no, Brad's new wife beat Abby up. Oh, okay, well, thanks for being cute about it.
I know, and he said it like, oh, no, like.
Stabler asks if Abby ever came back around after that ass-whipping took place. And the neighbor says he never saw her again. And he says it like, no. Never saw her again. And he looks up like bewildered. Like he just solved a crime.
This guy.
So dun dun, now we go to the bullpen. Finn is showing Craig in the crime scene photos when B&S roll up. I love notes page. Craigan seems flustered, but I think it's because once again we've only had a week between the capture of Daryl Kern and now this.
So much.
They walk up to him and they're like, hey Cap, and he's like, what's going on? They're like, don't worry, we did, but and he keeps like opening his mouth to ask a question. They're like, shut up, girl.
We're on it.
Benson tells him that the Emmy thinks that the body has been buried for 3 years. So here we go. 3 years. Originally we said four. Now we're going back to three. They recount the Stanton situation to Cragen, and he splits them into teams according to wives. So B&S are to go speak with wife number two, and Funch are to go speak with the neighborhood, see if anyone remembers the first Mrs. Stanton. Dun dun. So now we're at a property manager's office. So they don't really explain this. But we assume that this is what they're doing here because Cragen just said to Funch, Funch are the ones at this property manager's office. He just said to Funch, go see if anyone in the neighborhood remembers the first Mrs. Stanton. But now they're going to this property's manager's office. She owns the buildings around the Stanton property, and they are asking her if any of her tenants have gone missing within the last 3 to 4 years. So it seems that they are also kind of, without telling us, being like, we're going to investigate the possibility that this is not Mrs. Stanton buried down there, which is, you know, it's good that they're doing that, but.
But it's kind of weird. It's like, okay, well, why do you think one of them's buried in the back? Well, I guess they're also kind of like, oh, maybe someone saw something because a lot of these apartments look like right down into the yard.
So maybe it's almost kind of like they're covering their bases for a couple of different outcomes. Yeah. Like, because they say missing. And then, and she goes, the landlady's like, yeah, of course they go missing when they're late on their rent. She even says, she goes, I don't have the best clientele moving into my buildings here. So if they go missing, it's generally because they don't have the money to pay me and they've already been not paying me for months. So now they go missing. I don't really look into it. They kind of roll their eyes at her. And I'm like, listen, I don't really love landlords, but I feel like that's definitely a thing that probably happens. Yeah. It also kind of feels crazy to go to the police and be like, hey, one of my tenants has been gone and they took all their shit. I don't know where they are. I'm worried. They're like, lady, hate to tell you, but they're like, all right, well, nevertheless, can we take a look at your files so we can like, we kind of like files in our office. And she's like, yeah, go ahead. And points to this filing cabinet and it's, she opens it and it's like, you know, cartoonishly haphazard. There's like things sticking out and all this shit. And of course they're like, oh no, we have to do our jobs now.
No.
Dun dun. Now we're at the apartment of Mr. Stanton and his new bitch wife is what I wrote. So this wife is just a bitch. And it was almost so thick that I just had to take notes around it. But like, just if you watch the episode, she is a bitch. I love this actress because I hated her. Oh my God. I've never wanted to fight somebody so much. I was like, geez, she needs her ass whooped. So this bitch tells BNS that Brad and Abby divorced in 1997. She calls Abby a leech and a baselining junkie and an embarrassment to my husband. And she says my husband a lot. Like, I say Brad. I think she only says my husband. I don't think she says Brad. All while looking like she's about to launch a smear campaign against the local Rite Aid manager. So the new wife says that Abby and her used to be friends. They were in nursing school together. And she is very hurt by Abby. You're married to your friend's husband. You've been friends with her since nursing school, but you're hurt by her.
Well, Abby's also a hot mess. I think I called her Amanda earlier.
Brad was paying off Abby until the new wife told him to cut her off about 3 years ago. So they haven't heard from her since then. So as we remember, 3 years ago, the cutting off point was when new wife beat the absolute tar out of Abby, apparently, at 3 a.m., no less. So she's like, why? What has Abby done now? And Stabler's like, oh, well, a body was found in the backyard of your old home. And the ME says it's been there about 3 years. And then she looks at them and then she kind of looks down like, oh. Isn't that interesting? And I'm sure you heard about the ass whooping I served her because it was loud. And I was screaming, my husband. So after she kind of has her moment being like, oh, fuck. She kind of goes back to being like, whatever, I didn't do shit wrong. BNS asks her where Brad, her husband, is, and she goes, he's working. He's very busy, so no, you cannot go bother him. She, like, all but threatens to beat their ass. Like, she's very aggro.
She's, like, obsessed with him.
Honestly, it's giving a little bit that she's always loved Brad, so.
He's no prize.
He is no prize. In fact, here we go. Dun, dun. Hospital where Brad works. BNS go to where Brad works anyway because these people are not rich enough to sequester, so they didn't listen to her. She was like, don't you dare go bother my husband. And they're like, you only make $400,000 a year.
I mean, for people in the medical industry, they don't seem to be doing very well. If, like, that house they bought was in the same neighborhood as that lady's apartment buildings, where she was like, yeah, I don't keep track of my tenants.
Brad Stanton, they're outside talking, and he's telling BNS that he tried to make it work with Abby for a long time, but she was an opioid addict, and ultimately he couldn't handle her addiction anymore as it got worse. He loved her, so he stuck around trying to, obviously. Then he sees his bitch wife coming. She's, like, hulking over to them. He kind of shushes BNS. He's like, shh. Just like an outraged, angry rhinoceros. She goes, what are you doing? I told you he was busy.
And they're like, we found him outside smoking, so...
Right? She shouts at the New York City Police Department. So Brad tells her that he can handle it. She's like, okay, stop wasting our time. And I think she seems drunk, honestly. Like, what the fuck?
She's a little heated.
So after she goes away, Brad hands BNS a piece of paper with information on how to find Abby. And he goes, please, whatever you do, don't tell Pam. Probably because she beats him, too.
I'm sure she does.
So dun dun. Mercy AIDS Hospice, BNS arrive, they find Abby Stanton in essentially, I don't know if it's vegetative, I think it is at this point, but a sedate state. She's out of it. And it's from AIDS-related dementia, so I guess she became an intravenous user after a while. She doesn't have much longer to live. Brad Stanton pays her bills and keeps the roses fresh, and there's a thing of roses in the corner, which to me says that he loves her and he's just married to the bitch wife because Abby is a junkie. A baselining junkie embarrassment. They're like, okay, so Benson goes, now what? Back to the bones. Stabler responds. God. They say this right in front of Abby and her nurse, pretty much.
The nurse is probably like, can you leave now?
Nothing to do with anything.
Well, what makes me laugh is now they're going to do, like, two pieces of detective work and immediately figure out who the bones were.
Dun dun, now we're in Lance Reddick's office. Emmy Lance Reddick says that the victim died of a broken neck. But it wasn't from something like autoerotic asphyxiation, guys, because, you know, sex police had to ask. They know this because her hand was also broken, so it's implied that she put up a fight. Stabler says, that sexual sadist then. Their area of expertise as of late. We've had a couple of those, so they're really tuned up. Maybe that's why they solve it so quickly. They're like, had a couple of these.
We know what we're doing.
The victim was petite, again. But I think this just means in this case that she was short because she was 5'4". He goes, she was petite, she was 5'4". Anyhow, she's petite, she's short. And her teeth suggest that she is Eastern European because he found arsenic in them. This is the most Russian shit I've ever heard in my life, but apparently it is an old dental practice in Russia to use arsenic to kill the nerves. They don't say why they do this. I'm assuming it's a bad tooth, but I mean, of course, Russia. Because they probably won't find any dental records for somebody who was born outside of the US. They turn instead to this gentleman who's sitting in the same room as them. He's an expert in facial recognition programming. He's a little hot, I wrote. Thank you, past page. That's true. So the hot guy does a quick rendering of what the victim most likely looked like based on her skull, and now they have a composite. The bullpen. Cragen laments how hard it will be to find an Eastern European woman in the year of our Lord 2001. End quote. So she's from behind the fallen iron curtain. That only narrows it down to a couple of 100,000 of the poor huddled masses. And I'm like, okay, John Munch.
It's going to take you guys 1 second. I love that he's like, oh, we're never going to find her next scene. They're like, this is probably her.
Dead ass. Now we have Funch, they're checking their records from the surly landlady, only for Eastern European names now. Cut to, now we have a scene of all the gang making phone calls, and they're calling all the Eastern European people, and they're being evasive, or they allegedly don't speak English. So Benson goes, anyone find anything? And Stabler goes, yeah, Eastern Europeans don't trust cops.
Now, this first of all reminded me a little bit of that scene in Wanderbust, where they were like calling the countries to kind of try to figure out. Actually, I couldn't tell you why they were calling all the countries.
Because the writer, Schiller, was a travel writer. And so they were calling to, like, see if he had beef with the countries.
Yeah, but I was like, what are you saying to them? Like, you're like, hello, Bosnia. Do you know a Schiller? Do you guys hate him? Will you tell us if you hate him?
I'm realizing now, although I do like our theory that they were calling the countries just to, like, ask questions. No, so they were calling people that Schiller had brought up in his book, I guess. So, like.
Oh, okay.
Remember Stabler said, how was Belize? And I'm like, it's Belize. They make a note that between all of them, they have 6 names that are unaccounted for. So BNS head to missing persons to see if these people have been reported. Dun-dun, missing persons. Of course, they're talking to a guy who's just like bored and jaded. He's like, do you know how many people go missing? So he hands him a pile of files, and the very first one that Stabler opens, he finds an exact match for the composite that the hot guy came up with. This woman is Ava Perulis, and she went missing in April of 98, exactly 3 years ago.
Now, this is maybe says more about me. I thought the picture looked nothing like the composite. They held them up and they're like, do you see what I see? And I was like,
even the guy was like, yeah, close enough. Yeah, no.
Okay, I thought you were saying they look exactly the same. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, what the hell?
In the terms of this reality, it's an exact match.
It's like basically like 2 white ladies and they're like an exact match.
Ava Perulis rented an apartment behind the crime scene in February of 1998. It seems that she left after that because she skipped out on rent. She was reported missing by a man named George Burton from Rego Park, Queens. Dun dun. The Burton residence. Benson and Stabler pull up to George Burton's house and they're greeted by his daughter. Okay, I guess her name's Julia, but they go between Julie and Julia, so whichever one it is. Oh, and she's like 4 or 5. They're talking to her, and she's like, I can talk to strangers. And then George walks outside, and he seems like he's going to be a lot more difficult than he ends up being. He's sort of like, who are you guys? And they're like, we're the cops. And he's like, oh, okay. And they said that they're looking into a missing person named Ava Perulis, and that he was the one who reported her missing. They show him the photo from the missing persons file, and he's like, hey, I gave him that picture. That's Ava. And then right then, this gorgeous woman runs to the door and goes, Ava, you found Ava? In a very thick Eastern European accent that I probably won't be doing. She is gorgeous, but not only that, she is a spitting, might I say, identical image of Ava Perulis.
Everyone's like, oh my God.
What?
Now, can I talk a minute about how Mr. Burton was like, oh, Ava, did you find her? And they're like, maybe. And then they hand him the picture he gave the police. He's seen the fucking picture. Like,
yeah.
What is that supposed to prove?
I thought that too. I thought it was weird when he was like, yeah, I gave this photo to missing persons.
It's like
very weird.
I thought they were going to hand him like either the rendering. Usually it's they hand the picture of the like the dead body and the person's like, oh my God, that's her.
You just made me think of also. Why wouldn't they have shown him the crucifix and the dog collar sooner than they ended up doing it?
It's like they were in such a rush to bring out the twin, to have that twist.
Now we're sitting inside the Burton home with George and Ava's identical twin sister, Irina. Irina is played by Millie Avital. And so Well, I was struck by Irina's beauty. I was like, this girl is gorgeous. I need to stalk her, see where she is now. So upon stalking her IMDb, we found she's been in SVU before. And I'm like, really? Who? Who were you? Were you a beautiful background? Were you a beautiful cadaver? Who were you? She played Marta fucking Stevens, our very first starring character slash sort of the villain, we, you know, twist later, in the very first episode of Law & Order SVU, Payback.
This must be the first time in the series that they have brought back a major actress from one episode to be a major actress in another. Because like we discussed, I think, who was the person who was like an angry dad last season and then he came back and was like, oh, the fucking pedophile serial killer.
Yeah, the child killer.
But he was just like the dad who was like, why is he still in our neighborhood?
Only a year later, kind of, which is interesting. In sort of the same role, because she's playing an Eastern European woman again. I have a theory that they already had her on file with the payroll department, so they were like, it'd just be easier if we used her.
They were like, there's only so many Eastern European actresses, so we'll just use the same one.
Irina tells BNS that she and Ava arrived in the US together from Romania about 5 years ago. While Irina enjoyed married life and she settled down getting to America, Ava craved adventure and she hated the idea of, like, being tied down in marriage and all that. So they were always kind of, like, bickering over that topic, I suppose. So Ava apparently sought out rich men to fund her carefree lifestyle, would simply move on to the next one when, you know, the well dried up over there. So Irina just suddenly becomes emotional and she gets up and leaves. George tells BNS that Ava and Irina had a really tough childhood. They spent it in orphanages. They suffered a lot of abuse. So just, and he kind of laments like this is going to be hard for her because they were very close, but they fell out of, you know, contact with each other over the years. George tells him that a little more than 3 years ago, Ava and Irina had a contretemps regarding their respective lifestyles. So what I just said, basically, Ava was like, I don't like married life. And Irina's like, married life is good, Ava. Stop being slut. After that, Ava was supposed to attend Julia's first birthday party, but she never showed. So since then, the family hasn't seen her. And I think it's also implied that Irina never reached out to her. She was just kind of done with her after these two incidences. Nevertheless, George went looking for Ava so that the sisters could make amends, and he discovered that her apartment was empty one day and Ava was gone. So Irina chalked it up to her sister running off with one of the boyfriends, but George had a bad feeling and he decided to report Ava missing. And at first I'm like, I wonder why he had a bad feeling, and then we find out. Stabler asks if George remembers any of Ava's boyfriends. He says the only one he can really recall was a guy named Matt Sloan. Dun dun. So now we go to this fucking nerd's office. So, Sloan Importers. Matt Sloan is some rich importer. Don't ask me what the fuck they do. He seems kind of sketch. When Stabler notices that in his office, he has this table of photos of, like, him and random women, or, like, just the pictures of the girls, like, early selfies, it looks like. So Stabler's like, are these all your girlfriends? And Matt Sloan's like, yeah, I like beautiful women.
And I like keeping pictures of them. It's so weird.
I was thinking that, I'm like, it's kind of like a weird nerd flex, like, you know, these are my girlfriends. So Matt tells him that he dated Ava for 4 months and they broke it off because she was crazy. She threw a $1,000 bottle of perfume at him one day because he got that for her as a gift instead of the jewelry she preferred. On that note, I don't know if I would be impressed by $1,000 perfume.
I feel like that's such a waste.
It's impressive sounding, but it also sounds so stupid that it's like so exclusive that it sounds stupid. It's like, so instead of buying like, you know, a nice piece of jewelry that you can show off or a handbag, like a Birkin, really anything else, you get $1,000 perfume that if you were to go, well, that's a lovely perfume, Paige, I would have to go, oh, thank you. It's $1,000. It better be. And then you get to go and make fun of me for saying some stupid shit like that.
Yeah, having $1,000. And also like perfume, it's not something you can keep forever. Like, oh, I want to spray it only on special occasions because it goes off after a while. Maybe
it does.
Maybe longer if it's $1,000, but eventually it's, so I don't know, it's such a fucking waste.
It's also kind of like when people brag about doing things like, I drink Cristal in the morning. It's like, that is very lavish, but it just sounds kind of dumb.
Cristal or Corbel, it's all going to come out as pee.
Yep. So they broke it off after that incident, but he saw her again shortly after, it sounds like, at a party at the UN, where he saw her leave with the Romanian Deputy Chief of Mission. Sounds like a fake title. Chief of Mission.
It's very, I don't know, kind of like when they do business gobbledygook.
I'm manifesting as Matt Sloan for myself because he has multiple girlfriends, so I don't have to take the brunt of his shit. And he still buys you things. You still leave with a gift. I'll take it in lieu of a job is what I'm trying to say. Done, we go to Cragen's office. BNS give him the rundown, a blah, 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 blah. He tells him to go find out how Ava got into the country and also go talk to the Romanian department chief of mission. Department, deputy chief of mission. This guy's name is Razvan Toscu. Done, we're at Razvan Toscu's office. So Toscu's watering his menagerie of flowers that he has stored in here. It's fucking creepy. I hate walking into a home with too much nature inside of it. Makes me uncomfortable. I moved from nature. I want away from nature. Why do I walk into a metropolitan home and I walk into bizarre iterations of nature? Like, my friend has a banana tree. It takes up the entire fucking apartment. It scares me. So he says, yes, he did know Ava, and it was strictly business between them. He brought her to different events so that he would have a pretty girl on his arm who also spoke his language and knew their customs. And Ava was happy to join him because she got to meet a bunch of important men during these outings. But he doesn't think any of said men would have a reason to hurt Ava. Here we get the name of the episode, so I'm going to give it a chance to shine. Toscu is watering one of his orchids, and he's telling them that this orchid is a rare orchid. It's a hybrid that he created. So he was explaining to them, orchids are actually parasitic because they devour from a host plant to create the flower. Stabler asks if Toscu viewed Ava as parasitic. He says, no, their relationship was symbiotic.
I hate when, I don't know, it's like Stabler like thinks he's so smart. He's like, so are you saying that she's a parasite? And he's like, I'm just talking about my fucking plant.
So Benson asks if he knew how Ava got into the U.S. And he's like, no. No, I do not. The surly landlady is letting Funch into the apartment so they can look around. She says this. She's like, her accent is super thick and it's really funny. Like, she goes, this was hers. While being in there, the landlady mentions that an older gentleman visited Ava a lot. Well, they ask her, and then she tells them that an older gentleman visited Ava a lot, and he always parked his car by the fire hydrant. The one thing we learn from this scene, aside from, you know, the boyfriend or the guy who visited her, and small details about that, Finn and Munch also notice that the apartment looks down at the Stanton Brownstone backyard. Dun-dun, the streets. BNS and Funch are debriefing their findings over street food. Ava came to America in 96 on a fiancé visa under the sponsorship of a man named Paul Amos, who lives in Mineola, Long Island. Their marriage was arranged by a company called Euromatch. Of course, we're going to have a mail-order bride plot. Stabler volunteers that he and Benson will go out to Long Island to speak with Paul Amos, while Funch head to the matchmaker's headquarters, still in Manhattan. Maybe you'll get lucky, Stabler says, and he pats Munch on the back. So now we're in Mineola. Paul Amos, Ava's ex, lives in the darkest home I've ever beheld. There's just no light.
It's like a basement.
Dark wood everywhere.
Yeah, no
it's
windows.
Like black. No windows. It's very douchey, too. It's outfitted in douchery. He's got a pool table in, like, the middle of, like, where the dining room is, probably. Dartboard. Sports posters everywhere. Like, whiskey glass. So stupid. Men should never be allowed to outfit a home.
Nope.
Paul says that he paid $50,000 to bring... I might say Ava because that's how I say it, but it's Ava. Ava to America, and he's really pissed about it because he's screaming. He has a ponytail, and it's like such a strong middle part. This guy, they really went hard on him. They're like, we're gonna make you hate him. Benson says, so $50,000 ensured she would cook, clean, and be available for sex? Yeah, it's called being a wife, Paul says. Oh, it used to be, Paul. It used to be. Now men expect you to bring in 80% of the income and weaponize their weekly therapy sessions against you. I dream of a time when I was expected to only cook and clean and not work and do sex. God, I had the opposite of all of that. Anyways. So Paul, quote, returned Ava to Euromatch after the 90-day trial period, resulting in a refund / annulment. Cute. Stabler asks why he, quote, returned Ava. Please remember that anytime I say returned, I am putting it in quotations. Paul says it was because he didn't pay all that money for Ava to run around with some dentist. I mean, true.
Oops.
Oops, the investment went a little rogue. The dentist's office. This guy, I am convinced they just asked Brad Stanton's actor to come back and be a dentist.
I thought this was Brad Stanton. I was like, oh, wow, we're back to him. Like, how does he tie into this case? My fucking second watch. I'm like, oh, this is a different guy.
It's a different guy. And I don't think it is, though. I think it's the same actor. I didn't check into it, but it's what I want to say. I'm going to call him Dentist Brad. They're both doctors. But they made Dentist Brad have like a really thick kind of accent. Because whenever she says husband, he says it like that. He's like, her husband.
Maybe they did a casting call for Brad. And then this guy was so nice, they felt bad. They're like, do you want to be the dentist?
So the dentist said he really did care for Ava. And she was beautiful. He loved her, blah, blah, blah. They ask if he cared that she was married. And he scoffs, telling them that Paul Amos was beating Ava up, which I think we could have all guessed. Mm-hmm. So hard once that he had to cap 5 of her teeth. They ask him where he met Ava, and he says at a party where she was with her husband. Ava was all over Dentist Brad after she learned he was the dentist of the stars. Mm. I got a little confused about timeline here. I think once Paul Amos, her husband, returned her, quote-unquote, Ava and Dentist Brad ended up getting engaged. Benson makes a joke after he reveals this and says, who called off the wedding? And the guy tells us that he called off the wedding because he actually found out that Ava lied to him by way of hiring a private detective. And he was unaware. He thought that she was a student. She told him that he was a student. But then he found out that she'd come here on a marriage visa. And I don't know what he thought because she had an American husband.
Yeah.
So once he found out that she was essentially a mail order bride, he didn't want that type of mess in his life. Just like those Russian Natashas, the gold diggers, and like not the Natashas again.
Not the Natashas again.
So I guess he wanted someone to love him for him, which is crazy because fun sounding guy. I would certainly love him for him and not his money. So Benson and Stabler look at him kind of disgusted because of they're like, oh, you loved her, but you hired a detective. Okay. So they ask for the dental records for Ava and he goes and gets them. Dun dun, we're at Euromatch. Funch are walking with the company owner, Valentina. She says that Euromatch matches women from different Balkan East European countries with American men in search of a wife. So it's a matchmaking service where women in these areas who want to get married to American men specifically, and American men who want to get married to women in these regions specifically, can find each other. Not weird at all.
Not exploitative and creepy at all.
At one point, they're speaking in front of a wall that has a poster of this couple cheesing like really hard and wearing Hawaiian leis, and they're doing like swarty girl skinny arm poses. It's like marriage.
I was just like, did they use the same like man about town office?
And it kind of is the same. Like we get two of these legitimate businesses.
I was laughing for you that you seem to keep getting these like. Weird.
I think it's a test.
And I hate conspiracies and I keep getting like conspiratorial episodes.
I doubled up. So that's how you would have had these ones.
Oh, that's true.
So why did I put EM? Oh, Euromatch. I was like, M, who is that?
Who is that? There's already so many people. That's what I hate about this episode. There's too many people. I'm like, who's that?
So many people. I stopped naming them after a while. So Valentina tells him that Euromatch sends the men to different countries where they stay for a 2-week period and meet different women. So legitimate. Once they've made their selection, Euromatch takes photographs of the new couple to show INS and they handle all the paperwork on their behalf. That would be kind of nice, actually, because that paperwork is probably a pain in the ass.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
And they know how to fill it out right. No questions asked. How does this business even allow to exist, honestly? Like, wouldn't the BBV see this name and go, come on now.
Guys, please.
Finn and Munch are asking obvious questions. So like how we're finding this out is they're asking like questions. They're like, wait, isn't that illegal? Don't you have to show proof? Blah, blah, blah. And she's just answering them. And it all boils down to, as long as it looks legit, INS doesn't care. They don't look into it. They got too much to do. Finn and Munch are sus, obviously, because this sounds like human trafficking. Oops. They ask what happens if the marriages don't work out. And Valentina says, it's as simple as the men receive a refund. No problem. I don't get mad about it. Go ahead and have your $50,000 back. And the women are deported back to their home countries unless the marriage ended because the American husband was abusive, in which case INS makes an exception. This feels so false.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think so.
She claims that this abuse shit almost never happens because they do thorough background checks on their men, you know, because background checks really pull up a lot of, I guess it would pull up like police records. But we find out that I guess they don't really do this because Finn says that they're lucky Ava didn't sue them because her husband treated her like a punching bag. And then later on, we do hear his record, his police records, yeah. And they're all felonies, I'm pretty sure. So Valentina claims that they would have helped Ava get out of the situation if they'd known that she was being abused, likely placing her with her sister, Irina, is what she says. Munch is like, you know about Irina? Valentina says that Irina was also a Euromatch client, and her marriage was a match made in heaven. George Burton. So dun-dun, Burton home. This scene's kind of funny. So Irina's at the stove, like, cooking, and, you know, she could tell she's, like, kind of in trouble. She's in her looking at them like, And B and S are like, you lied to us. And she goes, I was afraid. And I'm like, they are kind of doing that thing. It's like blissful ignorance. They're like, why would you lie to us? This is like a totally legit, not dangerous, likely situation you're in. And she says that she was mostly afraid of Paul Amos, Ava's husband, because he was so violent. And he even hit Irina once when she was visiting the house and she was trying to tell Ava she needed to leave Paul. So B&S ask her if Paul ever threatened to kill Ava, and Irina pauses, and she goes, no, but I know he came close, and then she storms out again, because she's gorgeous, and she can't be in a room too long with people who are asking her questions. She's too beautiful. Wearing purple again, she looks stunning. Made me wish I could wear more purple, but I am the color of a dead fish belly. Dun-dun, the mean interrogation room. B&S, I should start going them, I've been B&Sing it this whole day. Benson and Stabler, they made Paul haul his ass all the way to Manhattan just so they could yell at him. So they read out his previous arrests sarcastically. Like, they're shaming him, but they're, like, doing it kind of like, yeah, you're a dirty wife beater, instead of being like, you're an asshole wife beater.
Yeah, they're like,
So they're just shaming him for being trash. And he actually looks kind of affected by it. He's like, stop, I'm not trash.
I'm not trash, he is, but...
I'm not. Yeah, he's trash. No, he did. So they're reading out his previous offenses. Sorry, his previous arrests include battery on previous girlfriends, and I believe he, like, fucked someone up in a bar fight. So he's violent. And those are felonies, so we know that Valentina lied about the background check. He denies killing Ava, of course. They're in the middle of dryly being like, big man, your wife, beating on your wife. Cragen knocks on the door, and they saunter outside the room. Benson goes, it's like a game of Clue. An importer, a dentist, and now this loser. Cragen's like, LOL, true. Well, the lab has something to tell you guys, so go over there.
Go there now.
Emmy Reddick's lab. Lance Reddick tells B&S after reviewing the x-rays from Brad the dentist that they are not a match for the teeth from the body.
The bones.
However, everything else about the x-ray matches to a T. Jaw, bone structure, everything else surrounding the teeth. So they pause for a second. Stabler goes, son of a bitch. Irina is Ava. Dun-dun, the bullpen. Cabot is funny here, but I guess she's right. She says that they can't prove that Ava killed Irina, even though Ava assumed Irina's identity, because it's technically not proof. If you're assuming anyone's identity, most of the time you did something to them, or the person has had something done to them. So Cragen reminds Alex that they've done a lot more with a lot less, and she's like, that's true, fine, let's go search the house. So they go to the Burton residence, dun-dun, the Burton residence. B&S arrive, and they let themselves in through the unlocked door. They pull a... hello, George, Irina. And then the door's already, like, open, so they go in. They find the house in disarray with broken items, like a broken lamp, if I'm not mistaken. It looked like someone, like...
ransacked the house, which makes no sense.
Right. And they even say, so they reveal to us, because it looks like somebody went through, you know, in that scene in The Great Mouse Detective when the bat breaks in and breaks all the stuff?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no, when he kidnaps the dad. It looked like that happened at first. But then we notice that in other parts of the house, like, it didn't happen. You're like, wait, it was only in the living room.
She flipped out in the living room for some reason.
Right, and then her own bedroom. So they go in the bedroom and they same shit. It's, like, all dumped. It looks like, you know, ransacked, a la Mouse Detective. So then Benson walks in and goes, oh, nothing in the daughter's room that was untouched. So they realize that Ava Irina was the one ransacking the house, and she stole some money. I guess there was a cash box. She took things. So that was it. It looks like in the middle of her trying to find money, she also broke lamps and stuff.
Which, when we find out her reasoning, there was no reason for her to, like, break shit.
Well, is the money? Is it in this lab?
Even though, like, she has no spite towards Mr. Burton.
So yeah, they're like, okay, so clearly Ava did this. She ransacked the house, stole money. They also find a note that says something to the effect of, I'm sorry, George, I love you, I love Julie, I never meant to hurt you or Irina. So they're like, ugh.
We got her. Except they don't because she's not there.
Cut to George at his job, which we don't know what it is, but he's like working outside. There's the truck. Oh, so he doesn't like believe any of this. He's like, oh, you, my wife is dead and her sister assumed her identity. No way.
Which makes sense because it's like,
yes,
that's crazy. And he's been like living with her for 3 years. And I would like to argue in real life, this would have never fucking worked.
You could never have gotten away with this, like ever.
How could she like know all the things there are to know about? Because I'm assuming as the wife, she's kind of handling a lot of day-to-day house shit.
Yes, exactly. He refuses to read the note or do anything. Yeah, he's like, it's not true. It's not true. He goes to his truck, you know, the back, he opens the trunk and Benson goes, George, look. And she hands him Irina's crucifix from the grave. So only then does he realize that this is true. I guess they don't say this, but I would assume it's because he never saw it again. He sits down on the back of his truck. He's like, you know, in that moment of shock. And he says that Irina used to attend church every single day. But 3 years ago, out of the blue, she stopped. And she told him it was because she lost her faith. And he starts to cry. Stabler asks him about the falling out that Irina and Ava had. George says that one day, again, 3 years ago, this day, 3 years ago, Ava had called and asked them for money. Irina went to Ava's house to tell her that they couldn't spare anything extra, but she didn't end up coming back until 2 a.m. And then she spent the next 2 weeks in bed, depressed. Stabler, a father, of course, goes, where's your daughter? And they're all like, oh my God. Everyone literally forgot about that.
You're like, oh no.
I forgot too. I was like, all right, there's a little girl. So dun dun, Julie or Julia's school. She's fine. They just missed Ava, the teacher tells them. She came by essentially to say goodbye to Julie. Like, that's not what they say, but I'm saying it. She gave Julie a locket necklace with Irina's photo in it, I believe. Julie says that Ava told her that they wouldn't be able to visit the puppet man today after all. And the adults are like, who is that, Julie? Who's the puppet man? Julie says Ava, but she says mommy. Sometimes brings Julie to visit friends of hers, a friend of hers. And while Ava is visiting with this friend, another man named Walt entertains Julie with a puppet.
Also, she makes him sound so much more insidious than he actually is. I'm like, a puppet man? A predator?
I know. I know. We're all like, Julie, were you touched? Because this is a whole other investigation. So Julie says that the friend's name is Valentina. Dun dun, the bullpen. Funch tells Cragen that they looked into the Burtons' accounts and Ava has drained them. Sweet. She was also taking increments of 300 off the top each month. Ava was handling all the bills, so dumb George didn't even notice. So we're now at Euromatch. Funch roll up on a squirmy little man standing in front of the reception desk. This is Walt, aka the puppet man. I love Walt because he basically just tells on himself this entire scene.
He's so harmless.
With almost zero prompting, except for the fact that they sound mad. Like, he's me. I'm a people pleaser. Like, literally, they roll in. And, of course, you know, Funch is scowling. They're pissed that they even have to do this. And they're like, where's Valentina? And then Walt goes, I haven't done anything illegal.
It's like, oh, okay.
They're asking where she is. They didn't ask about you. So then they're like, oh, yeah, where's your puppet? The one you entertained Julie Burton with. And this idiot replies, I take the money and I give it to Valentina. I don't know what it's for.
And they're like, oh.
Girl. So they scare him into snitching on Valentina's location by letting him know that he could still go down for involvement in trafficking if he doesn't tell them where she is. Valentina is at her other office somewhere in Chelsea. Oh, Chelsea. That's meatpacking area. We all know it's in meatpacking, at least by way of this year. It's a lot of warehouses, nothing good. Dun dun, the other office, aka a brothel. So the squad enters, and it's a classic brothel shakedown.
It's another raid.
So people are jumping up, scrambling. The lady at the front desk starts yelling, Barnes! At the top of her lungs, running down the hall, arms in the air flailing. She's going down a corridor of makeshift rooms, you know, the classic, like, black curtain over these, like, open doors. Disgusting men are rushing out from behind these curtains like gutter roaches. Women are emerging from behind the curtains. One of them grabs Olivia and starts frantically pleading in another language for help. So Benson, of course, goes, you wouldn't be holding these women against their will, would you? She, like, waves that girl off. She goes, down there, escape that way. Stabler tells the screaming lady, the butt-ass lady, the snitch, that if any of the women are being held against their will, she's fucked. And that woman kind of goes, oh. And she brings them to Valentina, who's like, so she comes out from behind her own curtain, and she's pissed.
She's like, how dare you come bust up my brothel?
She dead-ass says, she goes, how dare you barge in here? I'm like, lady.
This is illegal.
There aren't doors on these rooms. So Valentina's being hauled away, and they're like, where's Ava? But they enter the room that she just came out of, and in the corner, they see Ava holding and hugging onto a young woman who is holding and hugging onto her as well. On the desk, like a scarf opened up to reveal a bunch of cash with like gold jewelry on top of it, implying an exchange. Stabler grabs Ava as Benson is trying to restrain the young woman that she was hugging. As Stabler calls Ava by her name, the other woman begins to cry, it's not Ava, it's Arena. And Ava is yelling, I didn't kill her. Before they leave, Stabler asks who the other young woman is. And Ava tells him that it's her younger sister and that Ava was buying her freedom. So, dun-dun, the mean interrogation room. Whew. Benson and Stabler accuse Ava of killing Arena so that she could help herself to Arena and George's savings slash leech off George, which seems so fun. He seems like a barrel of laughs to fuck. Ava denies this, obviously, and she tells him that Arena was killed as a result of staken identity. Don't you know? She says that someone was after her, broke into her apartment, and found Arena there waiting for her, and killed her thinking that Arena was Ava. Ava was scared to go to the police because they're corrupt in Romania. So she buried Arena in Stanton's backyard because the earth had already been dug up when they were planting those hydrangea bushes. This was 3 years ago, we are reminded. In case you were wondering, this was 3 years ago. Actually, also in April, it gets brought up later. They're like, April, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow, three years ago to the week. So she assumed Irina's identity because both sisters were trying to pay up for the younger sister's, Oksana's, freedom from Valentina. They ask about the collar and the leash, and she says that it was hers, and that she buried her past along with Irina. They never ask her about, they're never like, well, why were you? I mean, I know it's kind of like not anyone's business, but in a situation like this where it's clear that she's being abused by people, I would be like, okay, so the collar and the leash.
That apparently just had to be, I mean, we know that it had to be buried with the body or they wouldn't be investigating. So it was almost like, right. They were like, oh shit, we need to explain the collar and leash. And she was like, yeah, that was mine. And anyway.
BNS are like, okay, but who tried to kill you? Ava won't tell them, of course, because she's scared of Valentina and her associates. Outside the room, Cragen says to Cabot that it doesn't make sense for Ava to murder Arena if they were working to buy Oksana's freedom. Stabler adds that he doesn't think that Ava could have carried a dead body down three flights of stairs by herself. They theorize that Valentina might have orchestrated the murder to force Ava, or forced Ava to participate. It's a dun-dun, nice interrogation room. We're in there with Oksana, and she's there with Munch and Finn. She tells Munch that she was brought over by Euromatch as well on a fiancé visa, but her husband changed his mind and returned her to Valentina. Valentina reimbursed Oksana's husband, but forced Oksana into sexual slavery to pay off her debt. She said it was her fault that the husband was not satisfied. She had to pay off a $50,000 debt now. So, of course, we're hearing, you know, the return is so easy and simple for the Americans. It's a 90-day trial period. And we heard that most likely they were deported back to their own country, finding now that they are not. And I thought that, too. I'm like, there's no way they just go back to their own country. Like, what? No. Oksana's been, quote, with Valentina under forced sex work for 3.5 years. And that's how long she was expected to be there, according to the phrasing of the script. So I think it's reasonable to assume that Ava was forced to do something similar after her first husband returned her, and then she was dumped by the dentist. I wonder if because it wouldn't have transferred over. It's not like a credit system.
Yeah, so I think like the first round of her like scamming all these rich guys was to buy her own freedom. And then probably once they got Oksana, they were like, she was like, fuck, now I have to do this all over again for my sister.
Right, right. So, because obviously between the two, you know, the husband, the abusive husband, Brad the dentist, and now, you know, she was out of luck. So she had to, So she was working for, you know, quote unquote, forced working for Valentina. I don't know if like maybe she had more leeway because she was smarter than the other girls. So
they don't make this clear at all.
They don't.
Like why Oksana couldn't go then. Not that she should have to. Obviously, she's being abused. But like, why couldn't
right,
she?
Right, right. Oksana doesn't believe that Ava killed Irina, and she thinks that Valentina had something to do with Irina's murder. Valentina threatened to kill Ava and Irina if Oksana tried to escape the brothel. I wrote dun-dun the kind of nice interrogation room, because it was like half and half. Valentina is delulu, and she seems to think she's helping these women. Like, she's, like, mad at them. It's kind of like when you get pulled over for speeding, but you're mad at the cops. You're like, ugh.
Well, she was kind of like Leslie from Man About Town, where she was like, I'm doing a service.
And Leslie had a little bit more of a leg to stand on. She was like, listen, the bullies don't have to fuck if they don't want to. I give the bullies an option. All I ask is that the bullies don't go rogue, take my clients. So yeah, Valentina's kind of be like, nah, I help these girls. Like, I'm a matchmaker. I find them love. Cabot, she's like, no, you most certainly do not. Shame on you. Cabot says, when Ava Perulis threatened to blow the whistle, you had her killed, but you got her sister by mistake. Who helped you? Valentina pauses and looks a bit nervous. Then she says she wants a lawyer. We cut to the bullpen here. Cabot tells Cragen, Stabler, and Benson that it would appear both Ava and Valentina are afraid of somebody. It's probably the same person. She says Oksana's statements about Valentina's death threat should be enough for probable cause to get a search warrant for Euromatch's property so they can ransack her financial records. I'm guessing that they want to find the highest spender here so that they can maybe see who might be, like, who might benefit from keeping Ava quiet. You know, and usually the highest spenders are somehow in cahoots, I think, too, because they end up being kind of like investors or whatever. Dun-dun, Euromatch's uptown office there, back where Walt works. They lead yet another raid. Two raids. they're storming the halls for the financial records. They encounter Walt once more, and they essentially just bully him into snitching again. Finn's like, do any other men come around here more often than other men do? And Walt is like, oh my god, yes, this one old guy with the same accent as Valentina. So Valentina and this old guy hang out in her office a lot, to which Finn says, yeah, exactly, what's that guy's name? Dun dun, and that man is, as I'm sure you've guessed, Razavan Toscu, the flower-loving creep from earlier.
Yep.
A surprise to exactly no one. Benson says that he's a diplomat, and Cabot responds incredulously, which means he could run you down and leave skin marks, and we still couldn't touch him. Cragen says that they'll figure out all of that later, you know? He's like, I don't want to deal with that right now, and he tells BNS to go handle George Burton. So George is actually at the station. He's going to help them talk to Ava. Cut to the mean interrogation room. We're outside of that room, and Benson and Stabler are encouraging a nervous George to speak with Ava so they can find out the truth about Irina's murder. So at this point, the only reason they're even doing that is because they're not sure if it was really Ava who motivated to kill her for greed, or if it's somebody else, like what they're thinking. I wrote here that I'm not sure how to feel about George.
No, he's like an idiot, but also I feel sad for him.
He bought a wife. Not good. But he did seem to love this wife, so I'm not sure.
He was like the 0.9% that actually loved and took care of their wife.
Yeah, he probably went to Euromatch more of like a, I'm really awkward, like I don't do well on dates. If these women are looking for a husband, maybe it'll be a little easier for us to connect.
Because Irina and Ava both seem to really like him.
Exactly. It seems like he's actually not a bad provider. So he walks in, and at first Ava is not looking up, so she thinks it's one of the cops, and she's like, ugh, when can I go? And then I forget what he says, but he's like, hey. So Ava sees him, she's happy to see him, and he's clearly disgusted by her. So it's like very interesting. The scene's kind of good. Ava tells George, because he's like, what is this? What's going on? What the fuck? She tells George that she had to assume Irina's identity to protect him and Julie, since Toscu had already threatened Ava's entire family prior to Irina's murder. So as long as Toscu thought Ava was dead, everyone was safe. Ava says Toscu was out to murder Ava because she threatened to go to the police if he and Valentina didn't let Oksana go. So this is likely because if George found out, he would have gone to the cops and tried to help them. Irina was like, yeah, my sister's probably just, like, off with one of those dudes, fucker.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. And George is like, no, we're going to report your missing sister missing. Likely because he thought the fucking husband killed her. He was probably like, dude, that guy was beating the shit out of her. He probably killed her.
Yeah, let's deal with this. Yeah.
TLDR, Toscu was abusing her, Ava. Sounds like he was probably her main abuser, and that she threatened to expose everything if they didn't let Oksana go, and then it kind of went left. So George asks how Ava knew that it was Toscu, and Ava cries that she saw Toscu outside of her apartment building, that he had left something next to the trash, like a plastic bag. So Ava looked inside the plastic bag, and she found Irina's body inside. Ava says that Toscu raped Irina and forced Irina to wear a dog collar. He did to her what he used to do to me. Ava says she put on Irina's wedding rings and she left her the crucifix. She buried her in the hydrangea bush hole. Sorry, that didn't sound so. That sounded a little clunky. The hydrangea bush hole. Maybe Ava had more flexibility because she was Toscu's main victim. So she was untouchable to other people or something.
Toscu's kind of a fucking moron,
though. Oh, so stupid.
What if the cops had found her body the next day and then this got solved 3 years ago?
Yeah, he's like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, really dumb. Like, so at this point, you know, George is listening to it, and then he kind of just gets emotional. He shouts at Ava, like, how did you let this happen? And Ava shouts back that she wasn't there. She screams, I wasn't there. So she arrived after Toscu killed Irina. So she literally has been saying this to everyone. She goes, I don't know how else to say this. I literally showed up after. Ava begins to cry. She's sobbing. She says that Irina never told Toscu that she wasn't Ava. So she protected Ava to her death.
Which I'm like, how the fuck do you know that?
How do you know that?
She seems to know a lot about what happened while repeating that she wasn't there.
Right. Also, at that point, he would probably have had to kill Irina regardless, and he probably would have made Ava help him.
Yeah.
Ava goes on to say that all of these men she chased, the jewelry she demanded, the money she pocketed from George's accounts, it was all so that she could buy Oksana's freedom from the trafficking ring. So she says to George tearfully, I'm sorry. And she's kind of, I think, like, she's leaning on him at this point. And it's, like, really kind of, you know, sad because she's, like, holding him, you know. And this is, like, it was her husband. I know
for
it wasn't
3 years,
really,
like,
3 years.
I mean, he literally says to her, you shared my bed for 3 years.
Yeah. And that, you know, that has a lot of connotations in there.
Yeah, they definitely, it's not just,
he kind of pauses. And you can tell in this moment, Ava really probably did fall in love with George. Mm-hmm. Or at least, because she's not repulsed by him at all, you know, and just, like, holding on to him. She probably loved him. And he just goes, sorry, won't bring Irina back. Lightly kind of just pushes her. Not, like, pushes her, but he sort of just, like, gets himself away from her. Ava's crying more, and she's trying to hug him, and he rebuffs her, and he goes, how can you live with yourself? I wrote, like, a sum-up thing, but I don't think we need it. I think we explained it. But again, if you got lost during my explanation of all that, Toscu wanted to kill Ava because she didn't want to be his toy anymore. She was probably going to go to the cops and reveal what Euromatch was up to, all of the trafficking, if he and Valentina didn't let Exana go. So they obviously didn't plan to do that. They were going to go have her killed anyway. He shows up to Ava's apartment. She is not there, but Irina has let herself in and is waiting for her sister. Toscu thinks that Irina is Ava. He rapes her. He kills her. He, like an idiot, leaves her in plain sight outside in front of the apartment building. Ava arrives as he is disposing of her body. She sees it as her. She buries her sister. There we go. That is why. So outside the interrogation room, Cabot asks Cragen and Bian asks if they think that Ava's story is true. And they're basically like, yeah, for sure. They point out that Ava is the only witness to her sister's murder. But Cragen's like, even still, even though normally that's a bad thing, they phrase it like they were like, well, this is good, but he's like, not so fast. Toscu is a diplomat, so apparently he can commit murder.
That's the long and short of it.
They kind of say that. They're like, yeah, well, if they care, we'll tell them. So Cabot says, I'll go talk to a friend. Because they turn to her, they're like, Alex, surely something can be done. It's the last 6 minutes of the episode. So Cabot's like, I'll go talk to a friend. So we take to the streets again for the last 5 minutes. She's talking to this guy. It's a friend of hers at the State Department of Justice. His name is Greenwald. He tells her that most other nations don't waive diplomatic status or waive diplomatic immunity ever. They're like, no, that's like usually so bad for them because they're always doing bad things. And she's like, yeah, but remember this one time, this one country waived it in D.C. after that one DUI case? And Greenwald's like, ah, true. Let me see if that will work. So essentially what that means is, If the crime is bad enough and you bring it to the country's attention, the government might decide they don't want anything to do with that person. So if they look into it and to them there's enough proof, they're kind of like, fuck, you're fucked. They know it was you. They will waive diplomatic immunity because they don't want, they're like, we're done. We don't need this person. We don't want them associated with us.
We don't want them back, so take them.
We don't want them back. Yeah, take them. We're good. So now we're in Toscu's office. Cabot and Greenwald are there with Toscu and I guess a representative of Romania or whatever, the embassy. Greenwald says, my government would like to request that you rescind Toscu's diplomatic status. Cabot says, Mr. Toscu kept women in this country against their will for the purposes of prostitution. Now he's a murderer. And I love the cadence with which she says it. It's so funny.
What are you going to do about it?
Now he's a murderer.
So, of course, the Romanian government guy is like, but Toscu is a really cool, respectable man. And me personally, he's never done anything wrong to me. So Alex tells him about Toscu's involvement in trafficking before pulling out a photo and saying, this is what Mr. Toscu did to a woman from your country. She hands him a photo of Irina's bones in the hydrangea grave. And I wrote, he turned her into bones.
Not the bones.
They hand this picture to the representative guy. And Toscu goes, let me see that. And he grabs it and he goes, tragic. Innocent. So the Romanian rep says that they need more proof, like more proof than a picture of bones and the word of criminals. I'm guessing he's like rolling in Valentina with that. So Greenwald says right then, he kind of cuts him off. He goes, all right, well, if you don't plan to revoke Toscu's status, the U.S. has no choice but to proclaim him persona non grata, and he will be forced to leave the United States within 48 hours. Dun dun, we're in Cragen's office. The squad is pissed about this, and Cabot's like, they're all like yelling at her. And she's like, I didn't know he was gonna do that. He didn't tell me he was gonna do that. So she does note that Greenwald told her that basically if the Romanian government had caught wind that they were gonna ask them these questions, they would have sent Toscu back to Bucharest as soon as they could. So again, I don't think they care.
They're like,
fuck, he got caught. Let's get him out of there. So Benson goes, so the bastard murders a woman and his only consequence is going home. Yes, Olivia. Girl, do you think the government, are you joking? Cabot says they need irrefutable proof that Toscu was there with Irina. Physical evidence.
Which is crazy, because I was like, I'm like, they don't care.
They don't care. No, I think at that point, if we have evidence, then Romania has to admit that they see it. Cragen says, go back to the bones. They're in the bullpen, and they're all eating. Munch is reading, I think it's just a decomp report or a horticulture report, and he says that it reads like a slug. Finn responds, the good earth swallowed our evidence. And it was beautiful. I really liked that. But he said it while he was eating, so it was kind of... So Benson leans over Stabler's shoulder, and he's reading a report, and so she's reading it over his shoulder. They are both chewing like cows, just like jaws jumping in the wind, all in unison. Stabler comments that clothing scraps were found with Irina's grave, but the reports on the clothes won't be back till next week. They chew for another minute, and then we cut to the lab. So the lab guy is just whinging about how long it takes. Like, you know when you go to somebody and they think you're accusing them of being not productive, so they start giving you all the reasons why? They're like, well, I've been doing this, and it takes this long. And you don't understand, because procurement has to approve it. They were testing the horticulture in the backyard, so that's the test. He's like, please give us the test. Do it now. Dun dun, we're at the Romanian mission to the UN, and it's April 24th. I'm just making a note so that we know where we're leaving off, so that when they fucking gaslight us next time, we know. Toscu is making his villain exit. He's all snarky and dry when Benson and Stabler appear before him. He's like, good morning, detectives. Come to see me off. Benson goes, you're not getting away with this. So random. So Toscu takes another step on the sidewalk, and they grab him and put him in cuffs. What was the point of saying you're not getting away with this? And then they just have to wait. He's like, oh, yeah.
Just cuff him.
Toscu's like, I'm a diplomat. And they're like, not anymore, you're not. And Benson delivers him the news that a test result came back from Irina's clothing, and it pulled traces of pollen from a plant called the Gigas Firmin Lambo. And it was kind of sad, because, like, you know, I'm a sucker for old men. Toscu goes, my orchid?
My orchids?
They're like, yep. Stabler goes, should have washed your hands before you murdered Irina. He is really bad today.
I know.
His lines are Stabler. Clunky, bro. What is going on? Cemetery. Benson and Stabler give their condolences to George and Julie. It's one of those quick ones where they're like, yeah, thanks a lot. And then they walk away. After that, Stabler says, Ava could have gone on forever being George's wife, Julie's mother. If it hadn't been for the bones, Benson responds. And they are a mere 2 inches from Ava.
I know, who's just standing there looking sad by the gravestone.
They should have just ended the episode right there. They should have. But no, for some reason we have to turn around.
For the second episode in a row, they're like, oh.
Let's just put in a few extra
put in
seconds.
30 more seconds. Yeah.
So they turn, again, 2 inches from them, and there is Ava. And she goes, Irina can rest in peace now. And then she begins to sob because the weight of this whole situation is finally off of her. Benson and Stabler look at her, they look at each other. Again, it's a bit of a bombastic side eye, in my opinion, and then they walk away.
Instead of being like, hope, like, you can recover from this, since you're a victim, they're like, yeah, I guess.
Executive producer Dick Wolf.
It was a fine episode, but this is the second ending in a row where I'm like, oh, it would have been so much cooler if they ended it on this line.
Right. Yeah. I thought that was strange. And it kind of took away the, you know, usually on the endings, you're kind of, because Brittany and I talked about how sometimes we need to break our note-taking up because we want to make sure we're not too tired to describe the ending, the end scene. You know, it's very important.
This one you could have been tired for.
Oh, I was tired and I stopped. I was like, I can't be tired. And then now I wasted my good energy on this.
Now, I think the actress who played Marta and now Ava Irina comes back again, but we won't ever see her. She comes back in like season 15. Bad shit happens to her when she comes on here.
She's never in a good place.
We only have 2 episodes left in season 2? Yes.
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah. We're flying on by. It's been a year. We're flying on by. It was nice talking to you guys. Bye, Sydney. Bye, Perth.
Bye, squad.